One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate your support. We know you have a lot of choices out there. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, you can do so at Macroaggressions. The website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. And if you like this episode, you can take the additional step of sharing it with your friends. We appreciate that. Thanks to our sponsors. Oh my God, we couldn't do the show without them. C60 Purple Power is making the best batch of C60 out there. You probably have never even heard of it. You don't know what the C60 molecule is. I'll tell you what, it's a naturally occurring carbon atom that looks something like a hollow soccer ball. They call it a free radical sponge. It has the ability to neutralize free radicals in your body and then reset itself again and again. It's the most powerful antioxidant known. It's hundreds of times more powerful than anything else out there on the market. And the guys that invented it, the guys that discovered the C60 molecule, it was such a big deal, they wound up winning the Nobel Prize for it. So it's a thing. It's something you probably aren't going to hear about on your nightly news. You're definitely not going to hear about it on your nightly news if you're still watching that. How dare you? But if you're interested in trying to find out about a product that is revolutionizing health, it is definitely under the radar. Go to shop. C60.com. Use the promo code macro. Just read up about it. See what you think. It's interesting. We've had Ken Schwartz, the owner of the company, on. He worked as a nuclear physicist. He was told that this is the product that you should use if you're working with nuclear particles because it may protect your cells. So take a look for yourself. They want us to remind you that these statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, prevent, or mitigate any disease. But I'll tell you what, go to the website, read for yourself, see what you think. And if you like it, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money on the way out. And look, here is my twice weekly reminder that you got to get prepared. I know you've heard me talk about my Patriot Supply for 2 years now, at least. They build a landing page for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. I encourage you to check it out. You can take care of all your food storage supply needs in like 10 minutes. You can get yourself a 3-month supply of food. It'll come in six buckets. They'll ship it to you for free. It's 120 pounds of food. look, I'm not licensed to give investment advice. That's my our guest that's coming up. Well, he'll tell you all about this. But I'll tell you, you've got U.S. dollars or Federal Reserve notes that are diminishing in value minute by minute. We've got food shortages that are coming. We've got supply chain issues that are very real, undeniable. It might be time to start thinking about this stuff and being proactive, not reactive. You want to be early rather than a couple days late on this. And look, if you want to convert, maybe you want to hold some of your wealth in storable food. It's not the worst thing in the world to have, right? So go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Take a look around. If you're already set up, maybe there's somebody in your life that isn't and you want to buy something, have it shipped to them. That would be really nice of you. So take a look at that and see what you think. It's our job to talk about this stuff, talk about the uncomfortable nature of where we're going. I wish it were unicorns and rainbows, but unfortunately, it seems like supply chain issues and possible forced starvation. I hope that's not the case. I really don't want that to be the case. I'm not trying to scare people, but I do see some bad things on the horizon. So look, you want to have food sorted out. So go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and make that happen. Well, our guest is one of my favorite people in the alternative media because he just is himself. You know, we're going to get into a whole lot of talk about the financial stuff, but that's Clint Russell over there from Liberty Lockdown. What's going on, Clint? Good to see you again.
Thank you for having me, Charlie. It's by the way, I am no longer licensed to give financial advice. So none of this will be financial advice.
Oh, okay.
When I retired 2 years ago, I gave up all my licensure. Why allow the state to continue to dictate, you know, what I do? So
I like it even better now. So you have all of the information, but now you've told the state to go fuck themselves. So you're doing it on your own. I love it. So look,
exactly.
We're just talking about theoretical investments, right? We're just talking about what you might be able to do, what you could do. First of all, congratulations on the SPLC coming after you. That's a big win. They're all suing each other. Like the heads of the SPLC have all stepped down. They're all in major lawsuits. They've been busted for sexual harassment and racism. On top of that, it's the greatest thing ever for them to go out. To you was like the, yeah, I saw that and I was like, Clint must be doing something right over there.
it was hilarious because it was brought about, for those that aren't familiar, it was brought about because I was a speaker at Freedom Fest, which is one of the biggest, I don't know, I guess conservative, liberty-minded meetups that happens every year in Las Vegas last week. And Andrew Yang, who started the Forward Party, was going to be a speaker there. So they wanted to somehow connect some dots to make it so that Andrew Yang was now affiliated with the alt-right in some fashion. So they plucked me out of oblivion and said, hey, this guy has had Ryan Dawson, or he has been on a show. He has been affiliated with Ryan Dawson twice. So because of that, that demonstrates some sort of daisy chain effect of bigotry. I mean, it's just hilarious.
God. They hate Ryan Dawson too.
They really, really hate Ryan Dawson. He has his own page over there. Until I have my own page, I don't think I'm going to have really achieved what I'm capable of.
Ryan Dawson is on the SPLC's calendar. When they put out like the yearly calendar, like the face of it, he's like February or something. No, actually he's July. They want to make sure they give him the longest month possible for his face to be up there.
And he's Native American heritage, married to a Japanese woman, lives in Japan, and he's a white nationalist. That's what they'll have you believe. It's hysterical.
It all makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Oh God. Well, what's going on? I've been talking about this topic. I know you have too, a lot. I think it gets pushed under the radar because nobody understands it fully, I shouldn't say nobody, but the general public doesn't understand the ramifications of ESG scores. And I tried to describe this as, you know, we've talked a lot on this show about social credit systems. We talked about how, you know, in China, they've rolled this out in Shenzhen where the facial recognitions, you know, tied to your cell phone and tied to your Weibo account and deducting money out. You know, you get caught smoking a cigarette on a bus and they tie it to you and they ding you and fine you before you've even gotten off the bus and around the corner. We see that as obviously a slide into tyranny, but I think ESG scores represent more like a social credit score for corporations. And of course, the worst corporations in the world are in charge of this. We got BlackRock all over it. First of all, your background in financial planning, I think, makes you more qualified to speak about this than a lot of people. Real quick, before you answer the question, give the audience your background again in why you know what you know about financial planning, then we'll jump into ESG.
Yeah, no problem. I was a private money mortgage broker for about 15 years, and 10 of those years I was an entrepreneur, had my own mortgage company. I managed a couple hundred million dollars, or was churning a couple hundred million dollars, and that's really the foundation from which I understand these things, is that, you know, because I was an underwriter for lending, you know, for lending private investor capital against real estate as the collateral, I understand risk assessment. I understand how to evaluate collateral and people's financial situation, things like that. So I understand the credit system, which is important to understand ESG, because it is, as you said, basically a social credit score, but a corporate credit score. And what I like to point out is that, like, while, you know, myself and you and Alex Jones and all these other people were warning people about the incoming social credit scores because we were paying attention to China, they backdoored it through corporate credit scores, which allows them to implement from a top-down fashion as opposed to a bottom-up fashion, which is what the social credit score will eventually be. So it's brilliant. It started in earnest in about 2007, 2008 is when it really started to take fire. And we're way behind the eight ball in this thing. I mean, it has been being pushed out by the biggest money managers on earth for the past 15 years, very aggressively. And over the past five in particular, it has gotten extreme. I mean, where the vast majority of new dollars that seem to be entering the financial investing world are being managed under ESG guidance. And I'm just telling people, I'm doing everything I possibly can to inform people that, one, this does not remedy what they claim it will. And two, you are empowering the worst people on earth to have more power than you can possibly imagine. And it's just, it's very damaging, not just to the, you know, fabric of civilization, but also to the investment world, which is ultimately what sustains life on the planet. You know, whether you hate or love capitalism, the truth of it is that the money that goes into the production of everything we need to survive is now being, you know, deployed in a fashion that is very woke and, in my opinion, bordering on communistic. And ultimately, this is why we're dealing with such terrible shortages of oil, gas, food in many countries. Sri Lanka just went under. You have revolutions that are happening in Latin America and Europe and, you know, in Asia. China is now has, you know, tanks on the street to prevent bank runs. This is all, I mean, it's not all exactly a product of ESG, but it is all fed into by that process.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Sri Lanka, because they most definitely are a product of ESG.
Yeah,
they got woke and went broke and had a revolution. And then there's guys doing backflips off the banisters into the president's pool. Okay, so this is what happens. This should be a lesson for leaders of smaller countries around the world that say, hey, listen, when you do this, when you get on board and decide, well, we're going to take an economic, we're going to make a policy decisions based on saving the environment and as opposed to making sure that our people have energy, you know, this trade-off that you make basically at the barrel of a gun by BlackRock, this trade-off has repercussions that could involve regime change, rioting. We've obviously saw Victoria Nuland and those vultures circling Sri Lanka in the months leading up to this. This doesn't seem like it's accidental. Is this part of regime change operation using ESG? Is this part of just practice trial run? Let's see what happens in Sri Lanka, because it's just Sri Lanka, and who cares? Or like, what lessons can we learn from what we saw over the last couple of weeks there?
Yeah, I'm still trying to decide, to be honest. I mean, certainly the fact that Victoria Nuland was in Sri Lanka a couple months before the fall, if you know anything about Victoria Nuland, you should be concerned that this may be some sort of color revolution, as we saw in Ukraine in 2014. So I'm not sure on that front. But I will say definitively that their implementation of ESG, their banning of like chemical-based fertilizers, crushed their food production and ultimately created this, you know, firestorm of kind of populist rebellion. So whether this is intentional to topple the government in Sri Lanka, or if Sri Lanka, I think that the Sri Lankan government may have been playing along, because the mechanism by which they are largely getting ESG implemented is to cut off access to, you know, say the IMF or the World Bank. And, you know, these smaller developing nations oftentimes rely very deeply, as, you know, economic hitman style. They depend on these loans that they get from the EU or from America. And I think that is largely the mechanism by which they get these leaders of these countries to go along with these plans. You know, whether or not they actually intended to topple them, or they just leverage their pressure via, you know, promises, you know, financial promises or lending promises to get them to implement these plans that ended up collapsing their economy. And ultimately, we're dealing with, you know, true believers that are Green New Deal agenda, like 100% sincere folks, and it just doesn't work. And that's why these countries are collapsing. I really don't know which it is. I mean, it certainly could be a Great Reset type shit where they're trying to topple these people, or it could just be that their plans suck and they don't work and people end up starving and revolting. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. The plans definitely suck. And they definitely are no good. The question is there something else on top of that? We're starting to see that here. Well, we're already seeing that here in America. We're seeing some decisions that have been made. You know, Biden administration, when he was running for president, and I use that term loosely, running for president, he was talking about, like, we're going to end fossil fuels. We're going to end it all, you know? You know, never mind the fact that his son is literally working in the fossil fuel industry doing all this stuff. But they talk about this. We're going to shut down pipelines. We're not going to renew these oil exploration leases and things like that. What do you think is going to happen? Oh, hey, exactly. We have shortages. Like, so if you were trying to break a country down in the Build Back Better model, could you do a better job than what the Biden administration is doing in America?
That's exactly why I don't spend much time trying to decide, you know, ultimately whether or not they're intentionally toppling the leadership of Sri Lanka, or if this is just a product of their worldview, because it doesn't matter to the people. You know, the effect is the same. It's like, and I think that's what we're experiencing. And what people don't realize is that as much as we are suffering in the United States because of inflation and shortages, it pales in comparison to the suffering that's happening in the third world or the second world nations. I mean, it's not even close, because ultimately because of the US dollar's reserve currency status, we get to export or you know, outsource most of our inflation to these other nations. So, like, while we're dealing with what I estimate to be probably 15 to 20% annual inflation, that they're dealing with 50 to 100% annual inflation. And these people started from a much more impoverished level. So it is absolutely brutal what they're experiencing compared to what we're experiencing. And it's only a product of the fact that we are the reserve currency of the world for now. So I think that ultimately the dollar will be the last to fall, because it still is perceived to have the most strength. And if you've been paying attention, even though we're suffering terrible inflation, the dollar has been strengthening against you know, almost every other currency on the planet. So this is the dollar milkshake theory. If people aren't familiar with it, is that even though the dollar has been mismanaged and will ultimately die a terrible death, and we will all suffer because of it, because of perceived or relative strength, it will be the last to fall. So you're already seeing terrible weakness in the yen and many other currencies over, you know, to the east. So it's very dangerous, man. And I really, as I've said many times, I don't know if this is the intent, but it doesn't matter. I mean, this is where we're headed.
Yeah. Well, I wonder then if we see this train coming down the tracks, it's inflation, dollar collapse, civil unrest, whatever the repercussions of that. what do we do? Where do we go? Where do we park our money? Where do we, this, of course, this is a theoretical conversation. Looking at gold? Are we looking at silver? Are we looking at Bitcoin? Are we looking at, productive farmland? Are we looking at all the above? Are we looking at, you know, like cash in hand? How do you, you see what's happening. You understand what's going on. These money manager guys, they seem to always know where to put their money in advance. What do we do? If those of us that are paying attention, we've got some money, we can put it anywhere. We see real estate is peaking. I come out of the real estate world. Real estate is peaking. Interest rates are starting to go up. That seems kind of scary. Do you want to buy a fourplex? Do you want to wait to buy? Where do we go?
Yeah, first off, you said that the money managers usually know where to put their money. Well, BlackRock, the biggest money manager on earth, has lost nearly $2 trillion in management over the past since the beginning of the fiscal year. So, even the money managers are struggling, and these are the most politically tied money managers, and they're struggling to figure out where to deploy capital and not take a loss. So, if you're out there, you know, feeling bad, don't. it's very challenging in this environment to do so. As far as my opinion, you know, I don't think that real estate is a good investment in this increasing interest rate cycle. If the Fed, follows through with their promises to continue with these interest rate hikes for the remainder of this year, heading into 2023, I think that you'll see, terrible deflationary effects in the investment world. And I mean price deflation, not necessarily deflation. So I think that My opinion, even though the gold and silver market are terribly manipulated, even though the cryptocurrency market is suffering the same kind of deflationary pressures because the liquidity crunch that occurred with the hiking interest rate cycle, I still am a believer long term that ultimately we will experience terrible inflation, and I think that those are good hedges in that direction. Personally, I think that for most people, they don't have a ton of investment capital in this environment right now anyway. So I try and, take it to the base level of like what I would be doing if I was, a young person that doesn't have a lot of assets, because I am retired, so I'm in a different spot. But for like the vast majority of people, the advice that helps, I would say, is, focus on getting some sort of level of self-sustainability. If you have a property, like if you're just someone who has a house, just a single house, you're not rich, you're barely getting by, but you do have a house. If you're not growing crops, if you don't have chickens, I think that's kind of a base level safety net that you can give yourself. I obviously think you ought to be armed. I think you ought to have some food supplies. I think you ought to have some access to potable water and just base sustained life type stuff. And then from there, once you have that, then you can start to build on a diversified investment portfolio that allows you to benefit whether there's a depression level deflationary bust or a hyperinflationary kind of death spiral of the currencies across the world. And honestly, like no matter who's telling you that they know what's coming, I promise you they don't. There is like I've been advising my listeners for the past year to go to cash, and I'm a libertarian, so that's a very rare thing to do. Because we always say the dollar is dying, I am not of that camp, because I understand how incredibly powerful interest rate setting is by the Federal Reserve. And I knew that in an inflationary cycle, they would begin to hike interest rates, which would ultimately create price deflationary pressures, which would make your cash go a lot further in that environment. And I was exactly right. If you had gone to cash 6 months ago or 7-8 months ago, as I was advising, you could be buying into the stock market at 40% or 30% down on many different companies out there. So I think that's the opportunity, is make sure that you're getting reasonable entry points into whatever asset you're interested in, because I think we will have lower entry points from this point forward. So don't be so fully deployed investment wise that you don't have liquidity to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves.
Yeah. Would Bitcoin at 20,000 be an opportunity that presents itself?
Who knows, man? I mean, it's such a speculative asset, and you had so much, big money that was getting involved, like the whales level money. And when those guys decide, okay, maybe this isn't it, and they withdraw, you see the price plummet. And I think that's what we've witnessed over the past, 7-8 months, like I said. So I think that, you know, long term, yeah, I am a believer, and I think that 20K entry point is a value. But short term, that doesn't mean that, you know, 6 months from now you won't be able to buy Bitcoin at 10K, in which case you could have acquired twice as many. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to advise someone like, hey, go all in at 20, you know, like,
right.
I think that would be a mistake. But I think also if you don't own any, it's probably prudent to start to hedge that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that now we're starting to see this conflation between the with all these Fed people, money manager, World Bank people trying to conflate crypto and Bitcoin and CBDCs all together. Oh, it's all just crypto. And it's no, it's not. So CBDCs have my attention because they seem to me to be a globalist wet dream, because you've got programmable money, no longer just dollars that are, untraceable, essentially. Not only are they just dumb money, now it's smart money, money that could be set to expire. Oh, we've had a Clint, the spending report came out after Christmas. Spending was way down. This is terrible. And Biden's never going to get reelected unless we get those spending numbers back up. And so we've made the decision, Clint, that 25% of your CBDCs are going to expire in the next 180 days. Get to spending. You know, when you have that, holy shit, they can really manipulate money. You spend your life in a money management world. What are the threats to CBD or the threats with CBDCs that I'm not even seeing? I'm seeing crazy things like that, but I'm sure that you know what can happen when these guys have total surveillance of the financial system. Like, what could they do with that?
Oh, it's a total panopticon. It is 24/7 surveillance of every man, woman, and child on the planet, essentially, because you cannot transact without them knowing exactly what you're doing. They can put any sort of requirements or restrictions on knowing your entire, you know, your biometric data, your personal data, your full, you know, they can link it to your social media. They can make it so that political dissidents can't access their savings. It is the red line to end all red lines. It cannot happen. It cannot happen. And everybody has to come together on this, no matter your political leaning. This has to be a complete non-starter. It will be the end of freedom on Earth. And I say that as calmly as I possibly can, just to express how sincerely I mean it. You know, it is the end of liberty on the planet. You cannot allow it. If you look at what's happening in China right now, you have a bank run that's occurring, and they don't even have the full CBDC rollout yet. But because they have a variant of it in their health pass, they just flicked everybody's health pass on red, saying that they could, you know, potentially have COVID. And if you don't go home, you'll be arrested. Even with that, the people still were like, hey, I need money to live. I'm going to go to this bank and try and get my money out. So they rolled tanks on these fucking people. I mean, this is what it is. And it's like, I don't even understand how people don't see it. You know, like, forget the whole conspiracy theory about it. It's like they talk about it openly. You have Janet Yellen and everybody else that's involved with our central bank. You have European central bank people. You have Christine Lagarde. You have, Klaus Schwab. You have the World Economic Forum. You have, what's his name? The scumbag Trudeau. You have all these people that are talking about rolling it out. And if you just look at the Canadian truckers, I mean, they were like a kind of a canary in the coal mine with this. And it was Bitcoin that was being donated. And even that was shut down. It's unbelievable. And I think that really what it is the states, the global state apparatus has realized that because of the technological innovations, which has given us, you know, us peasants more access to free thinking ideas and free thinking products and just a free market, they realize that this cannot persist with their ever increasing plans for, you know, total control. And because of that, they're finding ways and intelligently, you know, give the devil his due. It's very smart what they're doing. But if they collapse the economy, just imagine this, the economy collapses over the next year because of all their plans, which we all know are going to fail. Mm-hmm. And they respond by saying, well, you know, the dollar died, so we're going to implement UBI. And the only way you get access through it, for those of your listeners that aren't familiar, UBI is universal basic income. And the only way you get access for it is to sign up for the central bank digital currency. And we're going to be replacing the US dollar. It's the perfect implementation plan. It seems like a given that that's what's going to happen. I could be wrong, obviously, no, but it's just like,
you're right.
It seems so obvious that that's what they're going to do. And in a depression, with everybody suffering and having no other option, they're going to go along with it because it's going to be the only way that they stay alive. And I really think that that's what the Great Reset ultimately is, whether they want to make it explicit or not. They collapse everything. They replace fiat currencies with another digital version of fiat currency. And boom, Bob's your uncle. We're fucked.
Yeah, we're totally fucked in that scenario. And I agree with you, man. I think that's how you'd lay it out. Sometimes it helps to sort of like think like, well, what would I do if I was a supervillain? How would I destroy the world? That's how you would do it. You would create. I'm starting to see things going this way. People are like, well, how do you think they'll do the next one? Well, I think the next one, whatever the next one is, looks like climate lockdowns to me. And you're, you started your show Liberty Lockdown, you know, talking about the lockdowns for COVID. They were successful in a sense to the state. They understood like, this is how we could do it. We've made some mistakes along the way. Yes, we got the bulldozers out and bulldozed sand into the skate parks and, you know, into the pools there at the skate parks and did all that. That might have been, you know, the wrong look. So they've made, you know, maybe they'll improve upon what they did the last time around. But I see climate related lockdowns in our future as a way of behavior modification and keeping us in this fear. So I wonder how does that look? How do we go from we're never locking down again to 2 weeks to flatten the sun?
Yes. And I mean, we say it in jest, but it could honestly be a phrasing like that. Let me read you a tweet from Nikki Fried, who's running to compete with Governor DeSantis in Florida.
Good luck.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think she's going to get annihilated, thankfully. But regardless, this is a tweet from her just yesterday. As governor of Florida, I will declare a climate state of emergency and start our climate rescue, environmental justice, and infrastructure hardening operation on day one. And I mean, this is going to be what you see more and more from, you know, World Economic Forum aligned political candidates. This is, you know, the type of stuff that you'll get from Newsom, from Trudeau. Fortunately, many of these people are now quasi political pariahs, but this is clearly what the kind of neo-progressive agenda will look like to implement both climate lockdowns as well as,
COVID.
They were the primary driver behind the COVID lockdowns, but it will also be the implementation for climate lockdowns if they think that they can get away with it. So I really believe that they're going to have to find new mechanisms to fearmonger us, because at this point, the vast majority of people do not buy in. I mean, whether they buy into climate change, the narrative at all, most of them don't believe that it's so, you know, so dangerous, so urgently perilous that they're going to give up all of their remaining liberties. And what I said to Nikki Fried's tweet was, any politician that speaks like this should be made a political pariah. Read this as a threat to starve your children. I mean, that's really what it is. They are threatening to do whatever it takes to reduce carbon. And unfortunately, we're made of that. So
yeah,
like that, you ought to read it as like, we're going to reduce you. And if you care about you, you should probably oppose this. I think that's a pretty simple way to put it.
Yeah, I think they've done they're in the process of confusing the public with climate change as opposed to what the real problem is, which is pollution. And people get up in arms about this and they go, yeah, I live on this planet. I want what's best. How dare you, you dirty Republican conservatives. You just want to pollute the planet. It's like, no. It's not about that. You're talking about here we go with another invisible enemy, carbon. You know, first it was terrorists. Then it was COVID. Now it's carbon. It's always this invisible enemy that you can't see, that only they can see. They can find it. It's up there in the sky somewhere. And there's too much of it. Never mind that plants need it and we need it and all this stuff, you know, never mind the science, the actual science behind it. But could you create a better scam than carbon taxes. If you tried, really, you set an allowable limit, which you arbitrarily, the globalist scumbags set. They go, well, this is the limit, 100, whatever. Anything above that, we tax you. And anything below that, you have a maybe a little buffer, a little offset you can sell in the carbon market that Obama set up in Chicago. You can do that. We'll let BlackRock and Goldman Sachs and Citigroup manage it. It would be a new, it's like going to the Bellagio, and there's a whole new game besides craps and blackjack and poker and all. And it's carbon. It's like a whole new industry for them to scam. Could you let's talk about carbon credits and carbon taxes and carbon offsets and how this can be used as a way for the rich to get richer, behavior modification of the poor, and just an absolute stripping of whatever's left of society.
Well, let me start by saying if you're able to recognize that this is yet another invisible enemy that is used to take further control of your life, just ask yourself whether you believe that carbon emissions are ultimately this cataclysmic danger to us. Ask yourself, how did that work out with the war on terror? How did that work out with the war on COVID? It didn't work out at all. So you have to just, you know, like from its inception, you have to be very skeptical as to whether you believe in this or not. Can they actually accomplish it? And the answer has to be no. So why would you entrust them with this most vital of responsibilities? You should be relying on the people or the, you know, any other entity other than the global government apparatus to actually remedy this might be successful if you believe this is a serious problem. And to your point about, you know, how would it happen? What does it actually mean? This is a natural spinoff of ESG. I mean, it's going to be part of it. And for those that don't understand, you know, ESG is basically a mechanism to make it so that if you don't go along with these types of agenda, carbon emission agendas, things of this nature, that the biggest money makers on earth will divest themselves of your business. So they are already implementing the Green New Deal via ESG. And that's exactly what carbon taxes and caps, trades, all of it would amount to, is just mechanisms for further implementation of ESG, which is ultimately breaking our economic model and already creating shortages of oil, gas, food, all the most important things to sustain life. So I think it's, you know, I already said CBDC is the ultimate scam, but right beneath it, you know, like the worst B level is carbon tax and ESG. It is an incredibly brilliant scheme. It was implemented through the United Nations, Kofi Annan, in 2004. And over less than 20 years, they have already gotten the majority of the capital that's being deployed on the planet under this protocol. So yes, it is absolutely a huge threat to your life. And like I just really want to emphasize that I know some people will probably get upset with me for saying this, but there is no climate emergency that comes anywhere close to the emergency that it is if you can't feed your kids. Okay.
Right.
It's not even fucking close. And if you're standing in line for, you know, 2.5 days, as happened in Sri Lanka, to get gas, if you can't feed your kids, if you can't add your bank account, carbon, trust me, carbon's going to be the last thing on your mind. You're not going to be worried about that at all. And it's just such a first world mindset to even consider this as like putting it a priority one over everything else.
It reminds me of like the rich liberal white women that are like always out there rallying, like, we're supporting our black brethren and everything. Like, we're supporting the climate. It's like, what does that mean? What are you doing? Well, I'm doing my part to reduce my carbon footprint. Okay. But what is, so, okay. So we have a carbon tax, right? So they're going to tax you and they're going to take all this money. Now what? Are they fixing the planet? No. They never mentioned they're fixing anything. They just said they're taxing you. So
ultimately the only mechanism that's actually going to reduce carbon is new technologies. And those new technologies are going to come from an unshackled free market, which we do not have right now. And that's really the truth of it. Like if you believe that this is a cataclysmic risk to you and your family, the one thing you should be demanding is that we get rid of the regulatory bodies that make it so hard for innovation to come about. I mean, I'm of the belief that we can innovate our way out of this if you believe it's a huge problem, but we cannot do it by taxes and government interference. I promise you, we will all die if climate change is ultimately an existential threat. If we rely on global government apparatuses to remedy it, we will die. Absolutely. Yes. So, I just really hope that people understand, like, no matter your perception on this, no matter your belief on whether or not carbon is dangerous, you have to come to the table with the mindset of, we're going to have to get creative. And the government is not that. So the carbon tax, what it amounts to is they're going to, well, it's a perfect example. You still need oil and gas to function. It's evident. So what do? We shut down domestic drilling, and then we go and we negotiate with a bunch of fucking, you know, dictators in Saudi Arabia to get the same oil and gas we need. You have, which is now on its knees because they need Russia's oil and gas delivered to them to survive. It's like we are giving away all of our autonomy to these other countries, which we, you know, claim are led by dictators. I know there's differences of opinion on Putin, but regardless, if your perception is that he's the most evil man on the planet, why do you want to be at his mercy? It doesn't make any sense. Ultimately, you're still going to burn that oil and gas. So, you're actually increasing the pollution that comes with it because you're having to ship it. You're having to ship it from fucking, 6,000, 7,000 miles away. It's all so maddening. It's on its face. It's counterproductive. It's insane. I don't understand how anybody doesn't see it for what it is.
It is mad. You couldn't design a more dysfunctional way of dealing with this problem than what we're doing. It's like, let's slit our own throat, take our cell phone, throw it as far away from ourselves as we can, and then start trying to go find help at that point. It's like, look,
exactly.
We like Russia has talked about selling the type of oil that they have to Saudi Arabia. I guess it's different types, you know, there's different types, and right. Saudi Arabia has a specific type, but they need the type that Russia has. And we need the type that Russia has. And so they're saying, Saudis are saying to Russia, we'll sell it to us and then we'll just sell it to America. And yes. So then it's like we're going to stop Putin and his group of really bad guys. And we're going to put all these sanctions on them. And then we're going to rely on our friends here in Saudi Arabia to get the oil that we need. And it's like, well, where's this oil coming from? It's like, they're like, you don't want to know. You don't want to know.
It's still coming from that dictator that's killing those poor Ukrainian people. I mean, yeah. this is why it's all such an obvious, con game, or like a shell game. And the truth is we need these raw materials to live. So whatever your perception or your belief is on how dangerous it is, you still need it. You still need it, and you're still going to get it, and you're still going to line up to fucking buy it. And that's just the reality. Until we have alternative technologies that are better, that's the key. They have to actually be better. And I don't mean subsidized better. I mean actually better, cheaper, more effective, more efficient, produces more energy. Until we have those, we're going to come to be at the mercy of these dictators that you hate so much. And again, another perfect example of how bullshit this is that you could be producing nuclear power to replace the vast majority of this, and you don't, and you refuse. So if you're a believer that carbon is so dangerous, then why the fuck are you also opposing, you know, one of the cleanest nuclear, cleanest energy production vehicles that we have, which is nuclear power, which has been banned in the vast majority of the world? And Europe led the charge on that, and now they are completely at the mercy of Russia. I mean, it's so just insane what they're doing to themselves. And unfortunately, you know, it's not the politicians that suffer, it's the people that suffer in these nations. And it breaks my heart because they don't have a fucking clue. They're being lied to. So like I have sympathy for the people of Germany that are now, you know, paying enormous sums to, like, their utility bills are skyrocketing, like doubling, tripling over the past couple of years. It's backbreaking, and it's economically just terribly destructive, because if you all of a sudden have to pay triple for your, you know, just to warm your house, well, you're not going to be out buying, you know, that latest car or whatever. And then, oh God, how could I forget? Now you have Joe Biden, who's coming out yesterday saying by next week, if the Congress doesn't act,
he's going to be, you know, taking whatever executive orders necessary to implement the, you know, the climate emergency protocols that they have envisioned. And this is, I mean, I'm telling you, if we don't as a unit, you know, across bipartisan lines, just say, look, you're not doing this anymore. You're not going to turn us into Sri Lanka. It's going to get really ugly, like uglier than I ever thought possible in America. And then on top of that, you have the potential for World War III, which we're, you know, playing with Ukraine and Russia. But that's a whole nother show. We can get there later.
Well, you and I are both Southern California guys. How many times have you driven by the San Onofre nuclear power plants?
Oh, yeah. Hundreds.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I mean, and it seems like now that's off the table. I understand we have Three Mile Island, we have Chernobyl, we have Fukushima, we have all these horror stories of how nuclear can go bad. And I don't want to discount that, of course, be sure. Safe. But there is a whole reason why nuclear power has to be brought back on the table. And I remember reading in, you know, something, I forget what it was. It had to have been Club of Rome document. They were talking about, like, they don't like nuclear. Because obviously it infringes on their oil and gas holdings and all of their scams. So whenever you see the globalist group being against a particular form of something, whatever it is, energy or a type of currency or an idea, then you know you're on the right track. And for them to hate nuclear makes me think, oh, well, maybe it's not as dangerous as I thought. I looked into it. I thought, whoa, it produces quite a bit. Takes up less space than solar, you know, it generates more, it's more reliable, you can run it day and night and doesn't, you know, all these things. Like, so why are we, but I guess I was going to ask the question, but I already answered it in my own head. Why are we doing this? The answer is we have to destroy it in order to build back better, right?
Yeah, I think that's largely it. But you already laid out the groundwork for, you know, why the biggest money families or biggest corporations on earth benefit from the oil and gas, you know, cartels, monopolies, whatever you want to call it. But just from the consumer perspective, from the, you know, the common man's perspective, think about how many millions of people have died over the past 50 years because of our dependency on oil and gas. Think about all of the unnecessary wars that the U.S. government has fomented in the Middle East just so that they can, you know, do the bidding of Saudi Arabia or Israel or whoever they're working on behalf of. I mean, these are all a product of our dependency on oil and gas to some extent. I mean, there's obviously other geopolitical reasoning behind it, but it's a big aspect as to why we care so much about the Middle East and we don't really mess with most of the rest of the world. Right. I mean, Venezuela is a perfect example too. They're a huge oil and gas distributor. So guess what? We have to have coups there. And, you know, it's like this. There's so much human suffering that comes from it. So then when people bring up Three Mile Island or Fukushima, it's like it pales in comparison to the death and destruction that has been implemented because of the oil and gas, oligopolies. It's not even close. So from my vantage point, it's just on every level, it makes perfect sense to be aggressively pursuing nuclear energy production. And the reality is too, had we not had all of these bans because of Three Mile Island and these other catastrophes, we would have much safer nuclear power development at this point. And we have stunted technological innovation because of our fear-mongering over nuclear power while we pretend as if oil and gas has no deleterious effects as we go out and try and acquire it. I mean, it's just absurd.
Man, my little conspiratorial mind gets cranking when I start thinking about these nuclear power plant accidents and I start wondering how accidental they are.
That's a great question. I mean, you're a trillion-dollar industry and you have this this upstart industry that's head, you know, coming in on your field. I wouldn't put it past them. I'll just say that.
Yeah. You understand we've talked about the big players, BlackRock and everything. Help me understand this deal a little bit better. Maybe about a year ago, a year and a half ago, something was decided where BlackRock was going to be managing the Fed, was going to be deploying the Fed's money. How does that work? Why does that work? I understand who BlackRock is. I understand who the Fed is too. Like, I get they're both evil like organizations working together. But how does that
How is that process set up? How are they selling it to us that this is what it's going to do? But what is it also going to simultaneously secretly do?
Yeah, I don't think they sell it to us at all. They just pretend as if like
just say we're doing it.
Doesn't happen. Yeah, they just say we're doing it, and then we're not going to like. It's not highly publicized that BlackRock was in charge of deploying the COVID relief funds, things like that. I bet you 99.8% of people have no fucking clue. I bet 95% of people don't even know who BlackRock is. So right. It's like, and they're the biggest money manager on earth with over $10 trillion under management. $10 trillion. I really want to emphasize that. That's an enormous sum of money. And, you know, it's BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard. Those are like the three biggest money managers, and they're all implementing ESG. I just want to also clarify that when I say that they have this money under management, that's actually what it is. It's using our funds, us retirees, us savers, us investors, via our pensions, via our, you know, our personal investment decisions to entrust our capital with them. I mean, they don't have this much money, but they manage that much money. And so it is still our prerogative as to whether or not we want them to be managing that much money. Obviously, you can't get your pension to decide to no longer use BlackRock, but you can certainly pressure them to do so. And if it's your personal capital, you can absolutely withdraw it from BlackRock's ETF management or whatever investment vehicle you're utilizing them for. So that's really like the first salvo in this battle is, you know, people have to decide, do you want people to be managing your hard-earned savings that are ultimately working against your best interests? And I think the answer should be an obvious no. Fuck no, even. Like, why in God's name would you want Larry Fink, who writes out an annual newsletter to every CEO on earth? It's an open letter to every CEO on earth where he says, this is what I want to see from you if you expect any of my money. It's not your money, Larry. You fucking scumbag. It's not your money. It's our money. But that's how they have implemented ESG. They have gotten it so that every big business on the planet has to do as Larry Fink demands, or else they will not get any of those sweet $10 trillion of our dollars. It is so evil on its face. I just can't even believe that it's happened, but it has. And to your point as to why they're in trust with the COVID relief funds, I think it's really this simple. The governments love the idea of ESG. This is a perfect fascistic model. The government wants more of this control. The biggest money managers on earth want to have a better relationship with the government. They pair together. They use both the legal route of new laws when, you know, you have Biden or the Congress rolling out Green New Deal type policies. And then you have the biggest money managers on earth saying, we're in lockstep with you guys. So you combine the two, it's very challenging to compete. And this is why, you know, as much as I'm a fan of capitalism, I have to, you know, emphasize to people, like, this isn't a capitalist model. Like, we are in a corporatist, fascistic system. The only difference is that fascism is usually a national product. This is a global fascistic model. So it's something new. It's something very unique, and it ultimately has tens and tens and tens of trillions of dollars behind it. So we are up against it. The only hope that we have is that ultimately, you know, central planning will fail. The problem is that when it fails, we will suffer terribly because of it. And we could end up in World War III. We could have many civil wars. We can have revolutions. Like, I'm a peaceful person. I don't want to see any of that. But I promise you, if we don't find some sort of peaceful remedy to this in the interim, we are going to end up with hot conflict in many areas of the world. We're already seeing it. I put together this master thread that went super viral where I was just taking videos from all the revolutions that are happening all over the world. And I'm talking like 7-8 countries are having like legitimate, maybe not full on revolutions, but, major, major upheaval. And it's coming to a theater near you.
Man, I would love to see Larry Fink in handcuffs.
Me not too.
Not the invisible ones that AOC has on. What do you think about that performance art bullshit that we've been seeing from the left? They're just the biggest bunch of hypocrites. I'm not on the right. I think I'm with you. Like, we're not on the right or the left. Like, we can make fun of both of these people, but the hypocritical like left are like, oh, I'm being arrested. Oh God, could you guys shut the fuck up?
I I love it though, because I think that they're taking a taking notes from my buddy Alex Stein, who's the one who kind of, he has created this performance art thing. And I think that I honestly think that's what's happening, because like David Hogg got dragged out of some congressional hearing yesterday because he stood up and heckled the Congress people or whoever it was. I really think that they're looking at the success of Alex Stein and they're saying, I'm going to duplicate this. I'm going to, you know, fake get arrested. I'm going to be some sort of, you know, social media star. And it just doesn't work because they're humorless fucking assholes. And Alex is hilarious.
I know, I'm messaging with Alex going, you've had a hell of a week, haven't you? And he's like, yeah, it's been crazy. Yeah, man.
He went from like total obscurity to like one of the most famous people on the planet just by trolling, city council meetings. He's amazing.
I love it. It's I've described him as sort of like our generation's Andy Kaufman, you know, a guy that can go in there. And what it does is, in what his art does, and we're going to call it art so it's protected.
Yeah.
His art is a lot along the lines of libs of TikTok, which is, they're not doing anything necessarily nefarious. They're just holding up a mirror and showing these lunatics what they really look like. And I think that the loony left has lost their ability for self-reflection. They don't see themselves. They don't perceive themselves the way others perceive them, and there's a disconnection there. And what the libs of TikTok do is show, hey, look, this is what you guys are talking about. Nobody's forcing these people to make these videos. Nobody is telling them to go take a job in the school. They're not, this is where they're migrating towards. They like this. And on top of that, they make the videos about how they talk to their kids about gender because they're proud of them. Like, this is not being done against their will. And then for an Alex Stein or a libs of TikTok or the equivalent to come in and show them, like, this is what you've become, look at this, and then they get this mockery and ridicule. That might be the way that we overturn this, right? Is through humiliation.
100%. 100%. I mean, and if you look at the demands to have libs of TikTok banned, they were basically like hunting her. They were trying to dox her. They were going after her family. I mean, this is hard evidence at how efficacious this methodology is. You know, it works really well. If you can mock these people, because really the weakness in their position is that it's this woke scold ideology that is completely humorless. It is sucked all of the funny out of life. And anybody who still, you know, values joy, which I hope is the majority of people, has to look at this and go, like, no matter if I agree with you that, you know, racial issues are still a problem in this country or whatever, kind of like I was talking about earlier with the carbon emissions, whether you believe that's the issue or not, you still have to realize that, like, this is a shitty way to live, man. It sucks. It sucks to be completely humorless all the time. And I think that the fact that Alex is able to do it in such a bombastic, hysterical fashion is a perfect counterbalance to their, you know, what's her name? Greta Thunberg shaming everybody type mentality. It's like, it's just a perfect offset. And it just highlights how, like, do you want to be with the fun crew or do you want to be with the people that are suicidal, suicidally depressed? Like, I think it's an easy choice.
The suicidal death cult has no appeal here, man. I'll tell you, it's a crazy time to be alive, but I'm glad that we are narrating from the apocalypse. For those of you that are just listening to this, I don't know if you'll be able to appreciate the amount of bald beautifulness that's happening on this on this screen right now, but that's Clint Russell from Liberty Lockdown. Where can people find your work, man?
We are the follically challenged radicals. Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Liberty Lock Pod. And if you just search Liberty Lockdown, I am on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all over the place. Really appreciate it, man. Just for your audience's knowledge, if any of them are familiar with Judge Andrew Napolitano, I have him on every Thursday. So I will be having him on in about an hour. And he is just the best. I absolutely love the guy. And God, I have a litany of... it looks like I'll be having Sticks and Hammer, which is one of my favorite YouTubers. He'll be on first week of August. I should have Alex Stein on Second week of August, I should have Dave Smith on. Third week of August, I should have on Eric July, I hope.
Doing great things with his comic book.
Oh, man, incredible. Yeah, I mean, that's what I hope to have him on to talk about, is because I think he's the other layer of the cultural war that we're eventually going to win, because we still have, the humor on our side. So, I hope to get Adam Curry back on. He's one of my favorite. He does the No Agenda podcast, which has inspired the hell out of me over the past couple of years. So, incredible lineup. If anybody wants to check me out, just search for Liberty Lockdown. Thank you so much for having me, man.
And thanks for coming back on. And everybody, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow the show on Twitter at Macroaggression, the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.